And at the end of it, when I got back, they're like, "Ooh, are you okay?" It's like, you're in quicker than I thought you would be, you know? And it's like, I cut 15 minutes off my PR. And they're like, "Can I see that shoe again?"
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. And this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, welcome. This is Eric Dieter. This is the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. And if you're seeing this on Facebook, I also record the video there. Welcome to the show. I have a special guest today. I'm excited about talking to him. I saw him do an interview on a Instagram Live and Gina Selvia. And his episode is going to come out before Gina's, but he had some great information, and I was really excited about it and wanted to get him on. And so his name is Lynn Han, and he has a company called Han Shoes. It is a carbon composite suspension shoe, is the way it was described on the website. So Lynn, welcome to the show.
Eric, thank you very much for having me.
Now, did I get your name right? Did I get your name right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So, Lynn, this is, we call it Trail Talk, is trail runners tend to have conversations that just kind of go, and they're not planned. Once we hit the trail with somebody, who knows what we end up talking about? So I don't ever come with a list of pre-planned questions. Basically what I do is I know you're a runner. So give a little bit of background about who you are and as a runner and how you got started running.
Okay. So, way back at the dawn of time, you know, back in the Gym Fix book of running days.
Okay.
That'll set the time frame for you. I was in college and started running recreationally, you know, not on track or anything, just for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had already up to that point in my life been an avid bicyclist, you know, and was an avid bicyclist in college as well. And after that, but started running because that was the first big running boom, you know, and it was a fun social thing. It was something you could do quickly. You know, with friends. And since then, you know, I quickly going into, you know, local races, 5Ks and 10Ks and halves. I always aspired to the marathon and tried a couple of times to get into and do a marathon that didn't work because of various injuries, but then finished my first marathon in 95.
Okay.
And since then have completed 21 marathons.
Wow. That's a pretty good record.
Well, you know, and you know, I mean, over that span of years, I did my first marathon with CARA, the Chicago Area Runners Association, and I became a pace group leader for them.
Okay.
So our pace group, the 10-minute pace group, you know, I did that for 17 years, training people how to run marathons.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Well, and so for you know, 21 marathons in 17 years. Some of those years I did, you know, two marathons a year.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, in that process of doing all those miles myself and helping to train people, hundreds of people, how to marathon, I learned a lot about running, about long distance running, and also about, you know, helping people find their place within it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
So you were running, and I'd imagine running that much, you know, developed by trial and error. You found what works for you and were able to help other people find what works for them as well.
Well, and all of that went into kind of started, you know, cause I know we're going to head into the shoe here pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And all of that combined to sort of create this awareness, okay, that when people would come into the marathon program, you know, they would come with their histories, their their failures, you know, to get launched in a marathon, just as I had had, you know, and their injury history and, you know, their experience with running. You know, our program, the Chicago program, you had to be able to run 6 miles, you know, to start the program. That was the first run. And so all of that built a growing, you know, to this day, body of experience and knowledge of who the people who wanted to run, who they were and what they needed. And more than anything, what really started showing up for me was that the footwear we had was inadequate to the task.
Mm-hmm. So what time frame was this? This was you said it was in the 90s, in the early 90s.
Well, my first marathon was completed in 95.
Okay. It was after 95 to the right. Early 2000s. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And the shoe that we're talking about today, so I really got, you know, started in marathoning in 95, although I'd been running all the way back to college. And the shoe that we're currently selling in our Kickstarter, you know, mm-hmm. with the dual carbon ellipses, full suspension, the first time I ran a version of that shoe was in 2002.
Okay.
So there's a 7-year span.
You were 7 years running in whatever you could buy off the shelf.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And all the way back to college, you know, when I would wear out a pair of shoes, I've always been, you know, I'm an engineer. I've always been interested in gear and equipment. I'm used to appreciating, you know, the design elements in bicycles and downhill skis. I've done some downhill ski racing. So I'm kind of a gear fanatic.
Okay.
And so I've always, like, you know, taken a bread knife and I've cut shoes apart. It's kind of a thing. And you know, it's like, well, which shoes would you cut apart? You know, and lots of times I would donate the shoe, you know, put it in the donation bin, and they would, you know, the store would clean them up and give them to people who needed shoes. But if there was a shoe that was particularly good in my estimation, especially if I got the next model and didn't like it as much.
That happens all the time.
all the time. That happens. There's even a word for that in the shoe industry. They call it churn. You know,
yeah, okay.
You're churning the models, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would cut the old one in half, you know, either straight up the middle or cut the midsole in half or both. And I would just look to see, well, what was going on in this one that I really liked? And when the new one came out, or when I finished with the new one, when it was worn out, I would cut it apart. And then I would look at the two to see, well, how are they different? Why is the new one, which is supposed to be better, mm-hmm. why is the new one not as good as the old one, you know? And so I started looking and learning about the aspects of shoes that seem to make sense, seem to be helpful for people, mm-hmm. you know, for me and for others. And I would also cut shoes apart that really offended me. You know, which happens every now and then you buy a lemon, you know, and I would cut those apart and it became, you know, kind of aware of what was going on that was working and not working mm-hmm. in our running shoes.
So were there big differences between the lemons and the ones that were okay? That, did you find, were you able to identify the problems sure. in the ones that were not as good?
Well, for example, okay, if a running shoe is very stiff in the forefoot, mm-hmm. like has a very stiff forefoot, that stiffness, you have to overcome that stiffness with every stride, with every step you take, right? Mm-hmm. And where does the force go? Okay, this is a little puzzle. Where does the force go when you're bending that every time in every step? Well, the force travels up your plantar fascia around your heel bone and right into your Achilles tendon. Mm-hmm. And so Achilles tendonitis, you know, most often results from too stiff of a forefoot in a running shoe, for example.
Uh-huh.
And it was an Achilles injury that finally took me over the edge and said, you know, this shoe is so bad, I could build a better shoe. I could build a better shoe than this. And I was saying this to my brother, who's also an engineer. And he looked at me and he got kind of pensive. And he said, if you think you can build a better shoe, you should try. Mm-hmm. Here we are 20 years later.
So there you are. So it took you 20 years to, so what was it like then, right? You know, where did you get started? How, I mean, you said you're an engineer, but I mean, I'm sure you weren't a shoe engineer.
Yeah, no, I was a telecommunications engineer, you know, doing telephony and computer systems stuff. But, you know, with a strong interest in bikes and motorcycles, I used to race motorcycles and, you know, sports cars and all of that sort of mechanical stuff, skydiving. I did that for 20 years, scuba diving. I'm kind of a gear, you know, an adventure sports fan. And anyway, so after that incident, and that was 95, the year of my first marathon. After that incident with my brother, where he said, if you think you can do better, you should try. I started writing off to biomechanics researchers and going to hang out in medical libraries. I started writing off for biomechanics research reports.
Okay.
And I would send a stamp letter, you know, with a return envelope to these people saying, hey, can you send me this report that I read about? I saw it referenced somewhere. And you know, I would get these nice notes back, you know, oh, if you want this report, then you're going to want these three others, you know, that we did. And so they would send back this stuff. And I was compiling a collection of really interesting research. And at the same time, I would go talk to the front runners at the races I was doing and asking them, you know, what do they like about the shoes they're wearing? You know, what don't they like? And, you know, what's their injury history look like? And, you know, what aspects of shoes do you feel help you, you know, hit new PRs? That was a good question. And at the same time, I'm talking to orthopedic surgeons, you know, chiropractors, physical therapists, people like that, trying to get a handle on, you know, where are all these running injuries coming from? Because, you know, you're an ultra marathoner, which I'm still amazed. You know, I've never even done a 50K. You know, the longest I've done is a marathon. But you know, my chiropractor at one point was an ultra. You would probably know his name. And you know, he's done Western States 100 plenty of times, and Leadville, and all those big out west races. And I've just always thought, wow, you know, that's some real extraordinary human performance to be able to do that. And at the same time, okay, so I would talk to my chiro and say, you know, what's working for you in running shoes and what's not working for you? And he would tell me, you know, oh, I'm always on the feathery edge of getting injured. You know, I mean, I come in the door and I knock the frame, knock on wood every day that I didn't get another injury, you know? And if you're a bicyclist, you go out and ride 100 miles.
Oh yeah.
You don't expect to get injured.
No, you don't. Well, unless you fall, but you know, that.
Well, but I mean, you expect to get tired. You go do a long training run. You know, there's that thought in the back of your mind as a runner. It's like, okay, I got to, you know, watch every step, you know, don't step into a hole. Don't step on that rock right there. You know, don't sprint a little too hard, you know, and pull my hamstring. You know, it's like, don't do something foolish, because I don't want to take myself out for the rest of the month.
Right. And that's common for a lot of runners. I mean, it seems to be that runners expect to be injured.
Okay, so let's look at that, you know, why should we expect to be injured? And it's like the conditions within which we operate, okay, are defined and limited by pretty much the gear we have. Okay, because, you know, nutrition is excellent. You know, we all know to get good sleep. We all know to stretch and do yoga, you know, and some of us are a little iffy on the stretching, you know, now and then. But what became really apparent was that in looking at footwear, okay, and surfaces, okay, like if you've ever run on a reclaimed rubber track at a high school or college, you know,
I've only walked on them. I've never been able to run on one, but yeah, there've been a few times I've been able to walk out and feel them.
We used to do that a lot for speed work, you know, mm-hmm. and those things feel wonderful. You know, a new one, especially a brand new one, you know, if you ever have a chance to get on a new one. Well, I'd run a couple of marathons. It was 95 and 96, and I'm training for 97 marathon Chicago. These were all Chicago marathon. And in conjunction with all this computer work I was doing, I was flying in and out of O'Hare a lot, airport. Uh-huh. And down on the parking level at O'Hare, they had these five black rubber moving sidewalks, okay, made by Dunlop. Mm-hmm. And I would walk on these, and as soon as you hit this thing, if you're at all aware of your experience of the surface you're on, as soon as you would hit this thing, it'd be like, whoa, because it was a very floaty, bouncy, black rubber moving sidewalk. And it turns out, I can go into the engineering of this thing, you know, it turns out that this thing was under a lot of tension and only suspended by the rollers on the sides. The center was just free floating. And so it wasn't like a trampoline that would bounce you straight up.
Uh-huh.
It was more like a really taut sort of a trampoline that mostly would help push you forward.
Okay.
Forward. And so one weekend on a weekend in the summer of 97, I took a cooler full of Gatorade and a bag of shoes and a towel. I went to O'Hare and I ran a half marathon on these belts. and it turns out when I got there that evening, they were all shut off. They weren't moving.
Okay. So you actually did get to run and you weren't being propelled by them.
No, I ran and they weren't moving. And, you know, there were people working on the equipment cabinet, you know, for this thing. And I asked, this was before 9/11. I said, hey, do you guys care if I run on these belts? And like, whatever, buddy, you know, whatever floats your boat, you know, we don't care. We could care less. And so I sat my stuff down and I took my shoes off and I'm thinking, well, what shoes do I want to wear? And I'd already measured the length of everything. And I knew how far a lap was, you know, and I knew how many laps it would take to make a half marathon. And I'm jogging back and forth on this thing in my bare feet. And I thought, this feels pretty good. And I just took off in my bare feet on this belt. And about an hour into it, I'm looking at my watch thinking, you know, my trusty Timex, you know, at the time.
Well, yeah, that's, yeah. you know, it wasn't a GPS at all.
No, my Timex Ironman, you know. But I had measured everything with the tape and all that. So I knew how far it was. I'm looking at the time thinking, this is going great. I'm on track for a half marathon PR for me. Mm-hmm. Okay. And normally I would run 220, 230, maybe if it was hilly for a half marathon.
Okay.
You know, solid mid pack guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, at the end of that half marathon, I was just over 2 hours.
Wow.
Just over 2 hours. And yeah. You know, I cut off 20 minutes of my marathon PR. I mean, like 18 minutes. Off my half marathon PR. And I'm thinking that was like an epiphany. That was like the clouds opened and the sun shined in. And I'm thinking whatever's going on with this belt is some really incredible stuff. And I have to figure out a way to put this into a shoe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the beginning. That was 97.
Wow.
And so I started looking at materials. You know, like, well, is there a special material that we're not using right now that would make a shoe work better? And I built a prototype of an ultra high volume air shoe, believe it or not, that you had to inflate it with a bike pump. And I ran a couple 10Ks in that thing. I ran a couple 10Ks in it and it was okay. It wasn't bad, you know, but it was sensitive to the pressure. And then I made shoes that used, believe it or not, half racket balls.
Oh,
on the outsole.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was comfortable enough. That wasn't bad, you know, but not what I was looking for. And then I was playing with a cardboard tube one day, like that would come out of your paper towels, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I flattened the cardboard tube, you know, just against the countertop. And if you do that, if you flatten a cardboard tube like that, it makes kind of an ellipse, you know, sort of an ellipse shape. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm pressing on this thing, you know, and I cut it to be about like shoe width. And I'm pressing on this thing going, you know, that's got a lot of spring to it, a lot of resiliency to it. Maybe that would be a direction to go in suspension. Well, from there, I carved some forms and ordered a big roll of composite, pre-impregnated composite. And I figured out how to wrap the forms and put on the shrink tape and cook those puppies in my oven, like a pan of cookies.
Uh-huh.
And ended up with an elliptical suspension element that was made entirely out of composite.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, so go ahead. What's your?
Well, no, I'm looking at that. So that looks kind of like fiberglass.
This one is.
Okay.
This is my second generation. After I learned some more things about how to build these. So this is a larger one and a longer one. And this gave me even more of what I thought was the good stuff. And you know, this thing, you can't even squeeze this with your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
This suspension that's in our shoes, you can't even squeeze it with your fingers. But when you put it on your heel, when you put it on your body and take off running, it's perfectly fluid on your feet. Uh-huh. And so what happens is if you take that suspension and put one in the heel and put one in the forefoot, and it's another long story. I was out cross country skiing and it suddenly dawned on me, the one in the forefoot that wasn't behaving well, the suspension in the forefoot that wasn't behaving well, what it needed was a hinge.
Mm-hmm.
And so the forefoot of our shoe is hinged. And okay. So there's a heel suspension. And when you land on that, it deflects and it stores a lot of energy. It stores a lot of energy. I mean, more than anything anyone's ever put on their feet, you know, other than maybe like a downhill ski. Okay. Uh-huh. It stores a lot of energy. And then as your body comes over the middle of the shoe, it teeter totters, the shoe teeter totters, it expands in the heel, extends, and that preloads the front. And then as the ball of your foot rolls up to leave, and the hinge activates, it the front pushes you off into the next stride.
Mm-hmm. And so it does remind me of cross country skis. I mean, I live in Kansas City, so I don't do a lot of cross country skiing, but I've seen, you know, on the Olympics and everything that that for every time the toes for the cross country ski let the heel come up, that it's not locked into the ski.
Their boot, what they call the boot, you know. It hinges to the ski,
mm-hmm.
just like this does on this shoe. And that, so I'll just cut to the chase. The first time I ran, you know, this version, this home built cobbled together version of a suspension shoe with the ellipses that I had made and a hinge, the first time I ran that in a marathon. Now I'm running these marathons training people with CARA, Chicago Area Runners. So our training is exactly identical every year for 17 years that I did this. And my previous PR in 9 marathons was 4 hours and 38 minutes. That was my PR. Well, the very first time using the exact same training, and now I'm 9 years older, by the way,
mm-hmm.
The very first time that I ran this shoe in the marathon, I cut 15 minutes off my PR, which is 6% from 438 down to 423.
Wow, that is pretty impressive. Just changing a shoe.
Just changing the shoe. The training was exactly identical. You know, these were all or mostly all Chicago marathons. So same course,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything. Same time of year, you know, second weekend of October. And the interesting thing though wasn't the time reduction, although that's wonderful. You know, who doesn't like a good time?
Well, yeah, right? If you can run faster, you know, like we talked about before, a lot of people, if you increase your pace, they kind of expect you to get injuries.
Well, okay, so the amazing thing about that particular marathon, kind of like that experience, that first experience on the belt, years previously, 7 years previously. The amazing thing about that marathon was that I didn't have to laterally move through the traffic, you know, because Chicago is a crowded marathon. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, thousands, tens of thousands of people, 45,000 now in Chicago. And so I wasn't having to do this lateral movement. I was able to shoot up through the crowd diagonally.
Okay.
I was able to cut my way up through the crowd. And at the half marathon point in that marathon, that first marathon in 2002, I look at the watch again and I'm like, I'm on pace for a record marathon, a PR for me in the marathon. And so I'm going to kick it up a little bit in the second half. And well, long story short, the second half was faster than the first half. I ran a negative split.
That's pretty good for if you're running that far, because you know, most people start fast and slow down.
I know. Well, and it's pretty good for a recreational guy, a mid-pack guy too, because you know, the elites might do that, might run a negative split, but here I was doing it.
Yeah.
And the last mile was the very fastest mile in that marathon.
Wow.
And so cut 15 minutes off. And, you know, this shoe, your podcast listeners can't see it, but it's a pretty unusual looking shoe and it's all hand built.
Okay.
You know,
so you built the entire shoe. I mean, I used a shoe. Okay.
You used the
upper part of a shoe. You just redid the sole.
I carved everything out that I didn't need and then put my suspension into it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's what it looked like. It was like, okay, it looks like a shoe you just cut off and stuck these.
I know. Put the suspension in. And then, you know, that morning I'm in the tent, the pre-tent, you know, where everyone's getting ready and, you know, getting dressed and hitting the porta potty. And I showed my friends, hey, look what I'm running in the marathon. And they're like, oh boy, I do not know if that's a good idea. You know, what do you think about that? And I'm like, no, I'm going to give it a shot. And at the end of it, when I got back, they're like, ooh, are you okay? It's like, you're in quicker than I thought you would be, you know? And it's like, I cut 15 minutes off my PR. And they're like, can I see that shoe again? You know? And in the next few weeks, I loaned it to a bunch of people. And they all came back and said, can you make me a pair, you know? And so I was convinced if I could just get that shoe to market, you know, it would do for other people what that had done for me.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I wanted to ask about the design, just because I come from a trail running perspective, how have you had people who have tested it on trails? Because I know you're now, I mean, you jump forward a little bit, you're actually manufacturing these. Is there a trail version that's in the works? Or?
As of right now, the version that we have is suitable for light trail.
Okay.
You know, like crushed limestone, you know, crushed limestone, small gravel, it would work fine for that. For your heavy duty trail, I've got all kinds of notes, drawn up for what we would need to change to make it doesn't have a gaiter on it. You know, it'd be nice to put a gaiter on it. It'd be nice to put a little bit of a rudder on it. It'd be nice to, put a trail outsole on it.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things. But sure, we could make a trail shoe.
Yeah, because
I would love to.
Yeah, because I look at that and I'm like, okay, how would that do running through the mud? How would it do with stream crossings? I mean,
I've run these things. I've run 9 marathons in these shoes.
Yeah,
you know. And they've all been faster than all my previous foam shoe marathons. I've run cross country races, you know, through the stream, through the
Oh, really? Oh, okay. So you have taken them out into some
oh, gosh, yes.
rougher terrain.
And, you know, people say, well, do these big open carbon ellipses, do they collect dirt and mud? And I'm like, well, of course they do, you know? I mean, it's a big hole in your shoe. And mud or rocks will get into it and it just rolls right out. You know, the action of the suspension moving tends to make things, you know, sort of ball up and they fall right out. And then the hinge, people say, well, does the hinge collect dirt? And it's like, no, not really, because it's only open as your foot's leaving the ground for just a moment. It's only open. And so, no, actually, it doesn't even get that dirty. It doesn't collect any dirt, really, just dust, you know, from the trail. And so, no, the there's nothing inherently preventing this from being a good trail shoe.
Yeah, and look, I'm looking at the suspension there, and there are a lot of trail shoes have what they call rock plates, And I'm looking at that suspension. I'm like, you know, that'd handle pretty good rocks. It would look like,
oh,
I
mean, you know,
better than foam. Yes.
Yeah. No, this, I've run this on fairly rough, you know, trail. Mm-hmm. And the carbon, you know, the carbon is so, resistant to deformation that, we would need to, you know, we would need to put just a little thin layer of foam so that the outsole wraps around the rocks a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, like you see with a trail shoe.
I can tell you there's regular shoe manufacturers who are not doing that, because there's several brands that people run in. I was like, no, you don't really want to run on rocks with these, because they don't do well.
Yeah. But right. Yeah. No, you because of the suspension. See, here's the great thing. The you know, the outsole lands on the terrain, okay, but what you're landing on is the top of the suspension. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the ways that I put this to somebody once is like, if you've ever driven a car without any suspension, that's a golf cart, you know, mm-hmm. and it rattles your teeth, you know, to drive around on anything rough. And you wouldn't certainly want to drive a car without suspension for 26 miles, right? Well, why would you run on anything without suspension for 26 miles, you know?
yeah.
That's and previously that was, you know, a non-question. We didn't have the option. You just ran in whatever you could get. But now we have suspension. And it turns out that makes all the difference. When you're running this thing, it feels like you're being sort of levitated off the ground, like on magnets or something. It feels a little bit like a cross between regular running and working an elliptical trainer.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you know, people have said, why have you stuck with this thing for 20 years, you know, to get it to market? And if you had a chance to run a mile in this thing yourself, you would know why. Mm-hmm. It's really that different. It's that good.
Huh. So, and we talked, I remember when I'd heard you on the previous interview, you talked a little bit about it, that it's a variable drop. And I know that there are, you know, there's people who really are looking at zero drop shoes, so that the four foot and the heel are at the same level.
You know, right.
This has a little bit of elevation, but, talk a little bit about how the drop, the variable drop works.
Okay. So there's, you know, the old categories of shoes, like neutral or cushioned, and stability and motion control, those go away with this. Those don't really apply. Those are a previous era, okay? What this is, what I'm calling this, it's like, well, what category is this? It's a full suspension shoe, which means rear and front suspension, and, you know, the mechanism to get them to work well with each other, okay, to articulate mm-hmm. with each mm-hmm. other. And so, if you look at this, the static drop is 9 millimeters in this shoe.
Okay.
Okay. Right now, mm-hmm. We might reduce that a little bit. I might make the 4 foot a little bit taller. There's evidence that suggests that would be good. Okay. But when you land on the heel suspension and deflect it, okay, it reduces, it drops in height, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if it drops further than 9 millimeters, then it can go up to about 14.
Okay.
If it drops further than 9 millimeters, you're actually at a negative drop. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not zero drop, but a negative drop. But the crazy thing is, it depends entirely on your gait, how you are running, how far it drops. Mm-hmm. And depending on who you are, some people only move it a few millimeters, some people move it 14 millimeters. So it's a variable drop shoe.
Right. So it helps people, basically it will help them no matter what their stride is. It should help give them some cushion
Here's the crazy thing. Once I had that experience with this shoe in 2002, I formed a company with a friend, you know, to take it to market. Mm-hmm. And we built 50 pairs and took them in for biomechanical lab testing. Okay. To measure the oxygen consumption. The systemic oxygen consumption that you experience when you're wearing the shoe, mm-hmm. compared to a leading foam shoe,
okay.
for example.
Okay.
And what we discovered, and we get there, we get to the lab. This is up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, working with Dr. Ben Onig, who, if you're in that world, you know who he is, because he's a big deal in running biomechanics. He's the top guy. We get to the lab, and all these lab techs are kind of like, yeah, we're going to do a comparative O2 test. I'm like, why are you guys so down? What's the matter? And they're like, these never show any difference. See, they're like, you might see a 0.1% or 0.2% different. That's all you'll ever see between two shoes. And I'm like, mm-hmm. well, that's discouraging to hear. I'm like, how do you reduce O2 consumption? How do you reduce that? And they're like, oh, that's easy. Sit down. get off the treadmill, mm-hmm. get off the treadmill. That's the only way to reduce it. Well, we ran half of the test crew with the control shoe and half of the test crew with our suspension shoe. And then we swapped what we discovered, and they rechecked the numbers a couple times because they weren't believing it. What we discovered was that with an earlier version of this shoe, people were burning 2.2%, 10 times higher, than what they were used to seeing. They were burning 2.2% less oxygen at the same pace on the same treadmill wow. on the same day than they were with a top tier foam shoe.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty significant. Yeah.
Well, it's the difference between back of the pack and winning, most marathons, for example. Mm-hmm. It's like running 0.6 miles less of a marathon.
Right.
And so if at 25.6, when 25.6 rolls around, you get to raise your hands up and say, okay, I'm done. Bye, mm-hmm. you guys. Because I'm done. And it's like that. You're burning less O2. But the interesting thing, this is fun. The interesting thing is when you're burning less O2, what else is happening? Where's it coming from in your body to burn less oxygen? Well, it's coming from the calves and the hamstrings and the quads and mm-hmm. the glutes and the back and the core, and a little bit of upper body. And when you burn less O2, you're also burning less muscular glycogen.
Okay. So your muscle, your whole body's working less.
Your whole body's working less, and you're conserving your fuel. All of a sudden your body becomes like a Prius, you're an economy car, at whatever speed you're used to going. And so, that carbo loading you did the night before your long race, you're actually getting it to stretch farther.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the recovery on this shoe ends up being way better. I've done back-to-back marathons in this shoe a week later.
Okay.
And done okay in both marathons.
That's pretty good. Yeah. If you can reduce your need for recovery, that's pretty significant.
The one thing I haven't done, and I keep kicking myself, I haven't yet done like a 50K in this. So this would make that a lot easier. I could say, I did an ultra,
Yes. Well, and a lot of people who run marathons, they say, well, 50K is not that much farther. I mean, in the ultra running community, there's a lot of discussion about, well, is 50K really, technically, anything longer than a marathon is an ultra marathon, but, sure. There's discussion is like, well, it's not that much farther than a marathon. Well, these are people who are used to running 50 miles. And so, for somebody who's running a marathon, that extra, that extra between 26.2 and 31 is significant.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's a reasonable first jump. My Cairo, who is an ultra marathoner, he called the 50K the gateway drug to ultra marathoning.
Oh, of course. Yes.
It's like you do one of those and now you're looking at a 50,
Well, and I mean, it's very, I think all of us, and that's kind of why, what I do as a mindset coach, that runners get intimidated by the next level and, people running a half marathon, they have this doubt. Can I run a full marathon? What am I? And there are ways to talk to yourself. There's mindset things you do to be able to get to that next level. And then, you know, ultras. And I tell people, you don't feel like you have to run farther, run however far that makes you happy. And, you know, a lot of people who run ultras will come, they finish one distance. And they're like, well, I still have more. I still haven't tapped my potential. And so they keep pushing, like, say, what can I do? And so looking, and we're all looking for gear, like what you're talking about. We're looking for gear that will help make that whole process better and easier for us.
Absolutely. And the more, okay, I'm of the mindset that the more comfortable you can make those miles, the more accessible you can make those miles, you know, to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. In our pace groups, you know, like there's a progression all from 6 miles up through 20, you know, and then we do our step back and then your marathon. Mm-hmm. And from the 6 miles to the 20, you know, once you get into the teens, you know, the 16s and 18s like that, we would get comments, you know, on the way back, you know, how much farther, you know, Len, how much farther? Mm-hmm. And I would say in a very cheery manner, hey, it's none of your business. Your job is to run, you know. Mm-hmm. Your job is to pace steady and breathe and enjoy the scenery, you know, and run. You know, that's your job. Don't worry about the mileage, you know, it'll take care of itself, believe me. You know, and everyone would laugh, you know, but then I would hear them saying to each other, you know, how much farther? And they would say, none of your business. You know, it's none of your business. And in a joking manner, you know, but, you know, I think the big running boom and the big marathon boom in this country and the world, I think the thing that's taught people and the ultra boom, I think the thing that's taught people is that we are capable of so much more than we ever would have guessed, you know?
Yeah. And there are people out there doing, you know, crazy things, you know, like, have you, I don't know if you've heard of, they call it Big's Backyard Ultra. They call it the last man standing. Well, 2 years ago, it was the last woman standing because, and they have to hit the starting line at the top of every hour and run 4 point some miles on trail, a combination of trail and asphalt. And so they start every hour. And if you can't start, you're out. And so they go until only one person's left running. And 2 years ago, it was a woman. She ran 56 hours.
Wow.
And I can't remember how many miles, 200 and some miles.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty decent, I mean, you've got to be under 15 minutes a mile, to be able to do that.
Yeah. To be able to make the starting line.
Or 200 and some miles. And so, I mean, I look at those kinds of things and I'm like, you know, you know, 15 minutes a mile is pretty good for me just for 1 mile. And so, but it's just incredible what people are doing. And then, you know, just you look all over the world, there are just all kinds of people doing incredible things.
Well, and then there's this whole discussion about, you know, does the shoe itself constitute some sort of unfair advantage? You know, should we be worried about shoes that make you more efficient? You know, that's the controversy about some of the carbon shoes that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and who was it? There was some controversy about a record marathon pace, if I remember right. And they were using, he was using like, people to block the wind. And I mean, there were a whole lot of things done to try to increase his pace.
It was okay. So that was, at the Monza, the track in Italy.
The Monza.
And they had the thing that made that technically illegal marathon was that they were rotating the pace setters.
Yes.
They had a phalanx of six pace setters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They had a group of pace setters breaking the wind, but they kept rotating in fresh ones. The pace setters didn't go the whole marathon distance.
Uh-huh.
And that's not allowed in any marathon. And so that was, but they did come in under 2 hours.
Yes. I knew they came in under 2 hours and, you know, his feet actually took every step. So
I know.
I can't remember. I remember the pacing thing. But was he wearing the some sort of shoe that actually increased his?
He was wearing a Nike Vaporfly or Alphafly.
Okay,
I forget which one. you know, yeah. And which is a foam and carbon sandwich kind of a design. And those work differently.
I know they work differently, but they supposedly give you extra forward propulsion.
They do. I've run in those shoes. And myself, as a middle of the pack kind of speed guy, 10 minute pace guy, I couldn't work the shoe hard enough to get the results from it. But when I headed uphill, okay, I found a fairly steep hill. And so when I headed uphill, now I could sort of feel what it's doing, you know, the way that that carbon plate works with the foam, I could feel that. But I had to be going uphill because I just couldn't generate the speed.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not a 6 minute guy, you know,
and you were putting out that kind of power to get up the hill, but
exactly.
But on a level, you don't, you know, you just couldn't put out that kind of power to go.
I wasn't doing it, you know, and that's the beauty of something like a bike. You know, you can gear the bike so that you can access your power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have that kind of leg turnover, you know, to go that fast on the level ground, well, you hit your optimum cadence and then gear for the speed on a bike, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the shoe that we have now, though, okay, the Twin Ellipses, with the hinge and the suspension, the shoe that we have now, I think I'd have to do one of those laboratory comparisons. I think it's as efficient or maybe even more efficient in terms of O2 consumption than these marathon shoes that are out there now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the design is completely different because it doesn't look like it's relying upon the flex of your foot to make it work.
No,
it's just gravity and the weight of your body that makes it work.
Exactly. Well, and the crazy thing is, if you're just standing still, if you're not running at all, and you get down on the ground and watch someone who's wearing this shoe, the suspension is quivering up and down, front and rear, constantly as they stand there. And every time that piece of suspension absorbs energy and then extends and returns it to you, for every little up and down movement that suspension makes, that's motion your muscles aren't having to supply.
Mm-hmm.
And so standing still, it reduces your fatigue.
Okay.
And so walking, a lot of people, you know, these watches that measure your steps, a lot of people discovered that, hey, I'm putting in 5-6 miles a day, you know,
mm-hmm.
just walking in my job. And so, you know, and if you're doing that on hard surfaces, hard floors, you know, you can be pretty fatigued at the end of the day. And so we're trying to reduce fatigue for the rest of us, you know?
it's not just for running. It's for, you know, it would be something that somebody could, if they were on their feet a lot during the day, it would be something that would be beneficial as well.
Exactly. My whole mission, having seen all of those marathoners, you know, that come into the program and their injury histories, and then, you know, when we would have our pizza parties, you know, mid-season and mm-hmm. at the end of the season, you know, they would bring their friends, you know, to the pizza party, and people would approach me because I'm, you know, the 10-minute guy is a big target for, you know, entry-level runners, okay? Your eight minute pace leader, you know, those are the experienced runners. They're faster, but I was always getting people who would say, you know, I can only run, you know, half a mile, you know, how could I ever do a marathon?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, look, you know, you got to find, you know, I'd say, well, what shoe are you wearing? You know, and we'd talk about that. And I'd say, go get a good pair of shoes, go to the specialty running store, try 3 or 4 different ones, have them assess you, you know, and get yourself a good shoe, and then just go out and go around the block, you know, go around the block again, get to where you can do like a whole mile,
mm-hmm.
you know, continuously. And then as soon as you can do, I would say, as soon as you can do 2.5 miles continuously, sign up for a 5K.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, then they would come back. I would see them later. And it's like, look, I did a 5K. I've got the shirt, you know, and that's how you build a runner. That's how you build a runner. That's how you build the runner mindset. You know, it's like every little increment that they discover they can do, you know,
mm-hmm.
it changes people's lives.
I tend to be this way too. I want to jump into something. I want to do it all at once, and I want to be great at it. and you know, life doesn't work that way. And doing, you know, start with something small and build on it. You know, that's kind of been, I've learned, it took me a long time to learn that, but I finally learning that in life. Okay. You know, just whatever I want to do, you know, take that small step and just let's just that gradual improvement and keep going.
People overestimate what they can do, you know, in a week or a year, mm-hmm. but they totally underestimate what they can do in 5 years.
Right.
You know? And, you know, you, whatever level you're starting at, you know, even if, you know, you don't consider yourself a runner, whatever level you're starting at, getting out the door is a big accomplishment. Get out the door on a regular basis and go as far as you can comfortably, you know, so that you can do it the next day. Don't kill yourself, you know, mm-hmm. and get out there and do your 2 or 3 blocks, whatever. The next day, make it 4 or 5 blocks, you know, you work your way up. Now you've done a 5K. Well, as soon as you do a 5K and as soon as you can go, I would tell people, as soon as you can go 4.5 miles after you've done a 5K, sign up for a 10K,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, look, I got that t-shirt, you know?
Yeah. And then you can just kind of work your way up. And I don't remember, you know, I ran when I was in my late 20s and I don't remember any half marathons being available. And so, you know, but I know that became a thing, but that was always like, you had to go from 10K to a marathon. And that was kind of the big jump that everybody
had
to make.
That was a big jump. That was a big gap.
So the half marathon is good for, I mean, it's a good intermediate between 10K and a marathon.
Right. It is. It's a perfect step, you know, and half of it is just conceiving that you can do it.
That's true. I read a study. I can't remember what it was. They were looking at you know, high performance, high endurance, you know, sports or the places, the sports where you had to have a lot of endurance. They said the people who did that, the difference was they had a belief that they could do it. And that was the biggest, the people who had success had, you know, went into the race going like, I can do this. And that was a big component is the mindset.
Well, and you know, you see all these goofy ads, you know, this one simple trick for whatever, you know, you see that tagline, that hook, one simple trick. Well, it turns out the one simple trick is don't quit.
That's true.
Don't quit.
Yeah. You and, know? And then the corollary to that is you have to start. And if you do those two things, if you start and don't quit, you can do almost anything.
You'd be amazed. And so my whole mission, you know, I suppose you could say in life right now, you know, this shoe is like, I've done other engineering and inventing work and that was all good. It paid the bills and everything. But this thing is the thing I'll be known for, you know, ultimately. Mm-hmm. And with this shoe, we're going to be able to get, because we've done it, we've gotten wear test feedback from people. We're going to be able to get, because this is particularly good for high BMI people, this full suspension.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say high BMI, a lot of people think, oh, you know, that means overweight. And it's like, no, it doesn't. It means athletic and, you know, moderately well muscled.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of runners who are high BMI who are, all they are is fit.
Yes. You know?
And every person who ever came to me, you know, in the marathon training who was visibly carrying some extra weight, they were also strong. You know, your weight training, I would say your weight training 24/7, you know, mm-hmm. so you are underneath all that you're unhappy with. You're very strong, you know, so you've got this huge advantage to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And all we got to do is harness that, you know, get you out the door every morning, get a little distance. You know, maybe look at the nutrition, of course, you know, do some solid nutrition planning and you will both lose weight and gain speed and mileage.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
So you've got the shoe and you have started a company and you have a Kickstarter campaign. I'd like to talk a little bit about that. So if people are hearing this, you know, seeing it on Facebook or the video or hearing the podcast, Where do things stand as far as it's called Han Shoes, H-A-N-N, and
we're at Han, H-A-N-N.
Han, I'm sorry, I did
that's
it wrong.
Okay.
Hand Shoe.
Handshoes.com. And if you go to that website, right on the front page, there's a link to the Kickstarter. You hit that. And here's the crazy thing. So this is a brand new technology, full suspension, carbon ellipse shoe. Most of these other carbon shoes that we just talked about are going for about $250, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We're selling this thing for $99.
Oh my goodness. Most of the time when I go to the shoe store, I was like, oh, it's going to be another $150 and it's only going to last me 300 miles. So,
well, and because of the suspension, the carbon, you know, is so resilient. We're looking at double the life, you know, up to double the life of a conventional foam shoe.
Okay.
I have a pair of these that I put 800 miles on personally.
Wow. Okay. That is significant. I mean, most people who run 800 miles in a shoe, you know, they're starting to get injuries and having all kinds of problems.
You can't, you know, getting 400 miles out of a shoe is optimistic, you know, at that point, a regular shoe is starting to hurt my knees. You know, I'm getting twinging knees. Mm-hmm. It's like, I got to get out of the shoe, but no, we're selling this thing for $99. And the reason is we want to put this new design on as many feet as possible in this first go round, you mm-hmm. know, we want to get the word out and get people's experiences in real life out there of what this suspension can do for you. And so we cut it as close as we could, you know, to make it accessible for someone to do, like, as an experiment. It's like, what have you got to lose? Mm-hmm. You know, $99, but it's not $250 that you're losing, that you're risking. And there's potentially the upside of getting this amazing ride, this low fatigue, you know, fast recovery ride, faster, you know, PR kind of a ride, and having it last longer than any shoe you've ever had before.
Yeah, Yeah, I know. And I was surprised that you're doing it for that kind of price, because usually, I mean, that is, if people running shoes, the $99 shoes are like, they're pretty iffy.
Oh,
and
I was
always hard pressed to find shoes. Well, you could buy last year's models; they're marked down. That's the discount price usually.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that if it's a shoe that you know you like, but for something like this, and after this Kickstarter, once we have inventory, once we're doing e-commerce, you know, it's going to cost, you know, like all the other carbon shoes, it's going to go back up there, but unlike those, you're still getting double the life out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a pretty good deal. Cause if this was $250, but it's giving you 800 miles, that's like two pairs of $125 shoes.
Right.
Pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Especially if it's reducing your injuries and letting you run more consistently,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. I'd be willing to, you know, most people would be willing to spend more if they could reduce their injuries. I mean,
I know
that's got a lot of value right there.
One of the things we want to do is, you know, we've run that O2 consumption test. We'd like to rerun that with the new shoe, mm-hmm. you know, so that we can show how it's doing compared to all the modern stuff that's out there right now. And we'd like to run an injury reduction study. You know, we'd like to prove, we've got a lot of anecdotal evidence,
right.
you know, the testimonials on our website from people who have, you know, chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people with chronic pain who just want to be able to walk to the mailbox, you know,
right.
We're worried about running ultra marathons, you know, and a lot of people can't make it to the mailbox without pain. And so this has shown itself to help those folks too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we want to make it, you know, it's a shoe for your grandma and for you, you
yeah.
know, and for the age group competitors, you know, and
right.
ultimately sooner or later, we'll make a really sleek, you know, racing version for the elite marathoners. But right now, I'm more worried about grandma, you know, and all the rest of us mid-pack runners.
Yeah, which is what the big shoe companies haven't done. They went for the elites first, and then the rest of us kind of like,
you know,
oh, well, if you can't like your experience with not being able to make it work because you can't run fast enough.
I know. Well, and you know, there's another aspect that you're going to enjoy, because one of the things we've heard from the more elite athletes is that, you know, they want to do high quality of training. You know, you don't want to do junk miles. You want to get out there and do tempo runs, that sort of thing. But if you do high quality miles and try to do high volume of miles, well, you're going to get injured. So you either get high quality or you get high volume, but you can't have both. You know,
right.
You got to choose one or the other. Well, I believe with this suspension, you'll be able to do your high quality miles, because I've done it myself. You can do your high quality miles and get all the training in that you want.
That's pretty impressive.
That's a wonderful thing if you're aiming to run ultras.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. And the farther you go, the more you're gonna take that pounding. Yeah.
I know.
So what kind of time frame? We're at the time we're recording this. This is February of 2021. So where are you at as far as the Kickstarter is usually at the beginning. So what's your timeline?
So the Kickstarter runs for 60 days. Pardon me. Our Kickstarter runs for 60 days. We're about 10 into it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we already broke our goal on the Kickstarter. So now we're just building.
Okay.
Which is good. And then we've announced that we're delivering the shoes 6 months after the Kickstarter ends. So fall of
2021. Okay.
I'm trying to get them into people's hands before the fall marathon season.
Yeah. Okay. So, you're going to have sizing for, you know, all the way up to what's
14 for men.
Okay.
Maximum.
Okay.
And I think 13 for women maximum.
Okay.
Yeah. And people have asked what sizing. Okay. Cause when you order the shoe on the Kickstarter, you don't put down a size. We will be sending everyone a questionnaire asking about, you know, all kinds of data, height, weight, injury history, size that you want to order.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to use that to compile a picture of the kind of runners we are, or the kinds of people, you know, not just runners, anyone who walks on their feet all day and buys the shoe. We're going to try to best adjust the shoe for those people. And people say, well, should I upsize or go down a size? Whatever that silver Brannick device says you are, whatever size it says you are at any shoe store, that's the size you should order.
Okay. So the sizing runs true. Because I know a lot of shoe companies that, you know, the sizing is, you're kind of rolling the dice. And I always read through comments. It's like, okay, is it true to size? Because I've had some that just didn't work.
Right. Of course. Yeah. No, we're going to be as true to size as possible. And here's an interesting little thing. What shoe do you like right now? What are you running in, Eric?
I am a minimalist runner.
Okay.
And so I'm running, if it's warm enough, I'm running in sandals. And then I've got a pair that they're almost like water shoes. So they're like a 6 millimeter rubber on the bottom. I did that last year and started in January. So I've been about a year. I did 1,000 miles with on asphalt when it's clear, and if it's not something that is going to be hiding stuff that's going to damage my feet, I've run full barefoot. On asphalt. But I mean, I know that's not for everyone, and this podcast appeals to a lot of different people. So yeah,
sure.
I'm a carnivorous person, and I interview vegans. Your shoe was enough that.
I would really be interested in your feedback. You know, with that kind of a running history in this suspension shoe.
Yeah, I would I would always be interested to see what that's like. But yeah, no, I have. And it took my running history is like to go barefoot. It was about a 3 month transition. And so I finished 100-mile race into 2019. And I was running in a pair of Speed Goats, and I injured the top of my foot because I didn't get the laces loose enough. Foot swelled. So I had this injury in the top of my foot, and I'm like, okay, I've been studying this about barefoot running. I'm going to give it a try. So I got a pair of sandals and I've strengthened my feet. I've strengthened my feet enough that, I mean, that's the key. I mean, you've got to get your feet strong enough.
Yeah. Right.
And you also change the way you run. And so I've changed my running form, and something I pay close attention to. So yeah, it's for me, it has worked, but I know that for a lot of people, it's like, no, they don't want to go through
that. And so, no, that's, you know, I've had people in my marathon groups who were barefoot runners. You know, I remember when the Five Fingers came out, you know?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the first version of that. Yeah.
That was a big, you know, and then the Born to Run book, you know, really helped fire up that minimalist thing and the barefoot running thing. And I got up to about 8 miles in the Five Fingers, you know, and really like going to Florida to visit my brother, we would run on the beach, you know, the wet sand beach. Uh-huh. And that's a real good way to strengthen the small muscles in your feet.
Oh yeah. And
the Five Fingers were good, but that's nothing. That's something I wouldn't recommend to, you know, people toying with the idea unless they had experimented on their own, you know? But that's a really gifted set of biomechanics you have there to be able to do that and to go the distances.
Well, I haven't run an ultra in yet. I mean, I've done, what did I get to 20? I've gotten up to 20. Well, it's 28 miles. So actually, wow. You know, I did, in sandals, we have a, what's called the Shoustis. It's the Shoust trail, which is a quarter mile trail. And we ran from sunrise to sunset right around the solstice. And so, so I got in about 28 miles and was fine. I mean, it was like that. So I, as far as running the distance, I know that's not going to be a problem for me.
Yeah. No. And when you say sandals, are you talking Huaraches?
Yeah, they're Huarache style. They're basically flat, 11 millimeters total, Vibram sole on the bottom for traction. Okay. But they just strap onto your feet and no arch support, no real cushion. It's just a piece of rubber on your feet, hard rubber. And, you know, I like that because if there's a lot of rocks, I mean, if you have too thin, I can hike on almost anything, but if I'm running, my feet are hitting hard enough and I don't have time to choose where my feet go.
Right.
The big rocks can, you know, you can hit a rock that's like really, it's like, no, I wasn't ready for that one.
Like light you up, you know?
Yeah. But the 11 millimeters of rubber, I mean, just, I pretty much can hit any rock. And I could feel it, but
roll right over it.
Keep right on going. Yeah.
I would love to put a pair of our full suspension, you know, carbon ellipse on you just to get your feedback.
And I would love to test it because the other thing for me running barefoot, I dropped about 2 minutes a mile off of my pace. I shortened my stride, had a faster turnover. And the result was I had, instead of running 13 to 14 minutes on, and this is, I'm talking road. I mean, trails, it depends so much. There's so much variation, but I ran faster on trails, but on the road where I could kind of gauge it. I did a 10 minute mile at the end of 5 miles. I just said, oh, let's see what I can do. And I did a 10 minute mile. So I can hit about a 10 minute mile for one or two. And that's, you know, the year before running in shoes, I was running 12. So, so it increased my speed significantly.
That's really fascinating.
And actually, running barefoot, once I learned the form, I was able to run on asphalt and I didn't have the sore hips and the sore knees like I did running in shoes.
I could go into why, but the basic problem, okay, like here's some the foam, like you would squeeze the basic problem and what you avoided, what you found your way to work around. The basic problem is that foam is soft, soft, hard. You know, it's soft, soft, and then when it bottoms out, it's hard. And your body does not want that. Your body doesn't want to have that non-linear loading. And a huarache, you know, a sandal like that is like running on a firm surface. Mm-hmm. It's very linear in its loading, you know. So so is this shoe. The shoe is extremely linear and its load properties. And so I think you would find something to like in this.
Yeah. I looked at that and I think, yeah, I bet I would do well with it. And I also saw that, I saw a video of a guy jumping barefoot onto foam, and the softness made the foot muscles actually contract. And he jumped and landed barefoot on just a concrete floor, and the foot muscles spread out and actually softened. And so that's kind of what you were talking about, that loading or soft, hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes all your muscles in your feet tighten up. And
to catch
you at the end. Yeah. And so I could see where your shoe would have that. I mean, it's you don't have that softness immediately. There's a nice linear
gradient. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be like similar to running on moving sidewalk, or a golf green. I mean, that has enough kind of give on it that,
And if the golf green could like help boost you back, you know, that's what I'm talking. That's what I'm talking.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here with this, and I'm going to get this up on the podcast this next week. So people want to get in on the so the Kickstarter is the price for the Kickstarter is if you get in on the Kickstarter in the next 30 days, that's
60 days.
60 days. Okay.
60 days. If you're in the Kickstarter, the shoe
is $98. Yeah.
This $99 for this amazing carbon ellipse full suspension shoe.
Okay.
And we're doing that just to let everyone have a chance to try it, you know, at this first moment of its coming to the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds exciting. And I wish you well. And I'm following your company on Facebook.
Thank you.
Looking forward to see what, and maybe we'll be seeing these things in, you know, the next marathons, you're seeing everybody wearing these. So.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see that. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.